I've been a preacher for more than 30 years. I've studied and taught through the book of Genesis in churches all around the world, and I've trained pastors in the skills of interpreting texts. And it's very clear they're not stories about gods. They're stories about the powerful ones in the Bible and the sky people, the Anunnaki in the Sumerian tablets. The priests who knew how to read the library of Hebrew texts knew that they were full of texts about powerful entities who had interacted with our ancestors in the deep past. It had to be edited to give the impression of a seamless story of Yahweh, the one and only God, almost airbrushing out of memory the Hebrew story of paleo contact. I believe we are going to be hearing some very significant disclosures from the Pentagon regarding ET contact in the next 2 years. And the reason I think that is this. Before we get into today's content, on behalf of the Fifth Kind TV, I want to say a big thank you to Surfshark for sponsoring today's content. Surfshark is a VPN that allows us all to become citizens of the world through online access. If you're like me, you'll enjoy watching online content from countries all around the world. But I live in Australia, and what I'm shown in internet searches will be different to what you're shown in Canada, America, the Philippines, Germany, the Netherlands, or wherever you're watching from. By using Surfshark, I'm able to access a world of online content and see all the things that you see and many other things beside. Surfshark enables us to become citizens of the world through online availability.
Get fully protected. Follow the link in the description, sign up and use the promo code FIFTHKIND to receive an 85% discount. Plus, you'll get 3 months for free. Surfshark offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you try it and you don't like it, you can easily cancel your subscription and receive a full refund. With Surfshark, you can swim under the radar in the sea of online content. In 2023, 40 witnesses within the U.S. military intelligence community gave sworn testimony to Thomas Monheim, the Inspector General of the intelligence community. Their testimony provided an overview of the program. The program is the Pentagon's R&D unit's work in reverse engineering materials obtained from UAP or UFO retrievals. The existence of these units was authenticated by the Pentagon in 2019. In that sworn testimony, Thomas Monheim was presented with the names of the people who'd run the program over the last 70 years, the names of the people who had blocked disclosure within the military intelligence community, what was retrieved, when and from where, and the present location of entire ET craft and their pilots. Various witnesses have been given releases by the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community and DOPSA to discuss the scope of these matters in public, albeit without releasing the specific details. Furthermore, letters were written by the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community to the community of Senate and security bodies, guaranteeing that concern over the secrecy surrounding the program would escalate into a congressional hearing, which it did on July the 26th, 2023. This meant that data about ET contact became the stuff of political conversation at the highest levels and was televised for the world to see. Never before has such information been brought to the public regarding disclosure of present ET contact. But how does the general public react when such information is presented? In my correspondence, I heard from a lot of people who responded to that hearing with cynicism. Because all their statements had to be cleared, the three witnesses were disregarded by many people as shills. But I think that's a very great mistake. The fact that what they are saying had to be cleared by ISIG and DOPSA tells you that there are far more than three people represented on that panel in that hearing.
And the reason that Thomas Monheim allowed things to escalate to hearing in the first place was because of 40 other sworn witnesses who provided him with information regarding the names of the people who'd run the program over the last 70 years, the names of the people who'd blocked disclosure within the military intelligence community, what was retrieved, when and from where, and the present location of entire ET craft and their pilots. It was that information which moved Thomas Monheim to say more of this needs to be in the public domain. And so we are listening to a community of people when we hear that testimony. Now, having said, I'm pretty confident in the next 2 years, we're going to get a major disclosure because of what the Pentagon is doing at present. But it has to be pointed out, the Pentagon is not an individual. It's a community of people, and there's a spectrum of views within that community. Some would like to see more disclosure, and some would like to see less. But the reason I think there's a significant disclosure in the pipeline is because of the pattern that the Pentagon has been following since 2017. So that was the year when Chris Mellon, the former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush, leaked the footage of the USS Nimitz engagement with the Tic Tac craft in 2004. Now, that footage was leaked, and there was no action taken against Chris Mellon. He's still a free man walking around. And so we can gauge that this was a semi-official disclosure. I mean, just consider the seniority of Chris Mellon, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense. So there followed a 2-year period in which the Pentagon was able to gauge the public's response to information about that engagement. And 2 years on, the Pentagon stepped forward and authenticated the footage. Yes, they said that was genuine engagement. And yes, they said, in fact, we have had units in place for more than 7 decades who are devoted to analyzing materials obtained from UAP or UFO retrievals. Now, this was a huge act of disclosure. We hadn't heard anything like that since the 1940s, since 1947, when the public investigation of UFOs really began to go underground and where investigation of it began to be classified. And so the pattern was an unofficial release of information, and then 2 years later, after we've been able to gauge the reaction, we'll authenticate that and take another step forward in disclosure with the acknowledgement of these units. So if that's the pattern we're on now, that was an extraordinary amount of information that was released by ISIG and DOPSA in 2023, saying that we have entire ET craft, saying that we have access to the pilots of those craft. Now, of course, when that information emerged, there were supplementary questions. And every time those witnesses said, I could not answer that in public, that would have to be for a SCIF, a secure compartmented information facility. Well, that's where you should look, because the answer to that question is clearly going to be controversial. That's why it can't be answered publicly. And so we're therefore very interested in the craft, whether or not they're functional, in the pilots, whether or not they are alive, in our contact with the non-human biologics, whether we're able to interface, communicate, collaborate with the pilots that have been mentioned. And though the public hasn't been told the location of the entire craft, and though the public hasn't been told what was retrieved, when and where, we have been told that information exists and that the most senior figures in the world of military intelligence take it very seriously. So if that's the unofficial disclosure in 2023, then I believe 2 years from now, there's going to be another step forward. Even more far-reaching information will be revealed. In the meantime, the Pentagon is, of course, observing the public reaction, and there is no blind panic. But I think there is a great demand for accountability around the program, accountability around the trillions of dollars of public money that have gone into the reverse engineering program. And I think the momentum is building that transparency is what is needed. Now, some of the cynicism was that perhaps that hearing happened as a way of justifying the exchanging of a baton, the moving of fiefdoms, so that somebody else now has oversight over those black budgets, somebody else has oversight over the program, and those changes can be made in the name of transparency. And that language was certainly used, as we saw, for instance, Sean Kirkpatrick stepping down from leading ARRO, that's the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, and being replaced by Kathleen Hicks, the Assistant Secretary of Defense, in the name of transparency. So I think the Pentagon is acknowledging that people want to know what is going on, how far forward are we in reverse engineering these materials, and what is the nature of our present contact with ET visitors. I don't think cynicism is the right response. And I think when we consider the aerospace corporations to whom the program has been subcontracted by the Pentagon, I think we should wish them well. We should wish them success with reverse engineering these materials, because the moment we can do that, we become true spacefarers. And I think that is when everything will change. In 2020, in December, we heard from Haim Ashed, the former chief of space security for Israel. Now, the brigadier general held that position for more than 28 years, so he was in a very good position to know the status of exopolitics. It was his job to know if we were in contact and if there was any kind of a threat that would arise from that. And he said publicly that his understanding is that we have been in contact at a covert government level with ET visitors for more than 7 decades, but they've chosen not to self-disclose until the program has succeeded, until we, as a species, have become a space-faring species. When we are spacefarers, we become part of a space-faring community. And this is what Ed Mitchell campaigned for. Ed Mitchell, the Apollo astronaut, the sixth man to walk on the moon, talked about becoming part of the community of spacefaring civilizations. Now, the key to that, evidently, is our ability to reverse engineer metamaterials or exotic materials that have been retrieved or shared with us from UAPs or UFOs. We have heard publicly from some of the scientists working on that project. Jacques Vallée, the French physicist, Eric Davis, the American physicist, and Gary Nolan, and the word on the street is that these materials that we've retrieved have been engineered at a subatomic level, and that they were engineered outside of Earth's atmosphere. These were the materials retrieved from off-world vehicles not made on this Earth. That was the phrase Eric Davis used in the famous Wilson-Davis note. So we've got some very specific information that has been revealed. And bear in mind, Jacques Vallée, Eric Davis, Gary Nolan, they have all been ISIG and DOPSA cleared as well. So this is an amazing volume of information already in the public domain. I think our reaction is being looked for. And if there's not blind panic, we're going to be told a whole lot more about 2 years from now. And yet, still, I think the public at large, when confronted with the idea of ET contact, very often the response is disbelief. People, if they've not been following the story, they won't know about Jacques Vallée, Gary Nolan, Eric Davis. They won't know about Alain Juillet, the former chief of French security, authenticating this story about the program. They won't know about Brigadier General Haim Ashed authenticating this story about the program, saying it goes back to the time of President Truman. They won't know the urban legends about President Truman and President Eisenhower that I explore in my book, The Invasion of Eden. It will all be news to them. And for that reason, a lot of people still respond to the idea of ET contact with total disbelief. I know from my work in ministry that ET contact is a great taboo in the world of the churches. So I can give you a couple of for instances for that. A friend of mine works in the Church of England in the area of paranormal ministry. Now, paranormal ministry usually constitutes deliverance ministry, working with people who are experiencing entity attachments, or exorcism, removing entities from places. Now that's pretty stretching for most people to take seriously, but every diocese in the Church of England is supposed to have a senior advisor on that kind of ministry, there to equip parish clergy whenever they come up against issues of that kind. Now, my friend works in that area within the C of E. And at a gathering of the team of ministers involved, with the bishop oversighting that ministry unit, my friend said this one day, "We urgently need to develop a theological and pastoral response to people who are experiencing close encounters. Because in my last two parishes, I've had numbers of people who've had those experiences. We don't have any response, and it's important that we do." And the bishop responded by saying, "You're absolutely right. Please never mention that again." Isn't that an incredible response? So you can talk about deliverance, you can talk about entity attachment, you can talk about exorcisms and all kinds of spooky things like that. But the moment you mention ETs, we don't talk about that here. And that kind of taboo means that the Church of England is totally letting down people who are having this kind of experience. The Roman Catholic Church, I think, is ahead of the game. It was back in 2009 that the senior advisor in paranormal ministry to the Vatican, that's Monsignor Corrado Balducci, was saying that people who experience close encounters are not having a psychotic break. They don't need a psychiatrist. It's not a demonic experience they're having. They don't need an entity remover or an exorcist. They have experienced a totally different kind of being, one that merits serious study. And I think most of the churches around the world have fallen down in engaging with that. I agree with Reverend Dr. Guy Consolmagno, the senior astronomer for the Vatican Observatory, who says that we need to be ready to engage with ET contact because extraterrestrial beings are in the Bible. They're in the Old Testament and they're in the New Testament. And all my Eden books show the evidence for that from the biblical sources. So the churches should have no excuse in preparing people for contact in the present day, and yet they're falling down on that aspect of the job. And it's one of the things that really motivates me to put out books like The Invasion of Eden, because we really need everyone at the table in this conversation. I think silencing, ignoring, or gaslighting people who are experiencing these things, and sometimes we're talking about mass sightings, is just totally unacceptable. And it is not that institutions like the Church of England don't know that this is an issue. There was a national gathering just recently of priests involved in paranormal ministry for the Church of England. That's the Anglican Church worldwide, the Episcopalian Church in the USA. And at that gathering, the question came up, "Are you aware of the work of Paul Wallace?" "Oh yes, we have letters about him every week," which I have to say I was quite pleased to hear. And yet, no theological response. If I am right that there's going to be a far more significant disclosure in 2 years' time, churches around the world, including the C of E, have got a lot of running to do to catch up with what's going on. And they might just not be in a position to pastor anyone through the turbulence of the period that will follow those disclosures. That's a big motivator for me in getting my books out there, getting the Eden series out there, so that people can begin to engage with what's been happening and think through what that means for their faith or their non-faith, what that means for us as a species, and how we move forward once we realize we have powerful company that may have had some hands-on involvement in our exopolitics for a very long time. Despite everything that's in the public domain, I think people still respond with ridicule when they hear stories of ET contact. And that's no accident. For decades, departments of defense around the world had officers whose job was to collate UFO sightings, to collate reports of close encounters and mass sightings, and classify all the cases that couldn't be explained away, and publicize all the ones that could be explained away. And so it was really a public policy to encourage the public to regard ET contact as a joke, so that anyone stepping up and saying, yes, but this is for real, will be treated with ridicule. And I think when that's gone on for decades, that level of gaslighting has a profound effect on our culture. I mean, I know I'm taking my life in my hands every time I step up and talk earnestly and sincerely about ET contact. I know that the cultural bias is to ridicule. And sometimes it's worse than that. I begin most of my days with correspondence, and every morning I have messages like this in my inbox. It's going to be a bloodbath when Jesus returns. You have no idea what's coming. You'll have to forgive my intense disdain for your views, because what you are saying is heretical and blasphemous. You are clearly a Freemason, a Bolshevik, and a psyop, and it is obvious to me that you are under satanic bondage. You are leading people away from the truth to Satan, and are going to have a long, long time to repent. But it will be too late. Good luck to you. People can get very aggressive when their worldview is threatened. And I do my best to show my mass, to explain why I hold the view that I do, why I believe that in the Bible there are narratives of ET contact hidden in plain sight. But the problem for a lot of believers around the world is that they have been taught that the whole of reality has to fit into a small number of boxes. And I'm talking about myself when I say this, because earlier in my life, when I was in the full flight of evangelical ministry, I thought of the world in exactly the same way. Everything was either God, the devil, angels, demons, human, animal, vegetable, mineral, or it didn't exist. If you couldn't fit the thing into one of those boxes, then it didn't exist and you shouldn't talk about it. But I had some experiences early in my life that I realized did not fit into any of those boxes. And the more I've been involved in coaching individuals who are contactees and experiencers, the more I've been involved in workshopping with people who've had that kind of experience, the more I've realized we live in a very interesting cosmos, in a soup of company, and that those boxes are not sufficient. Monsignor Corrado Balducci was very clear, a close encounter is not a human psychotic experience. It's not a demonic experience. It's not from the devil. And why, the moment you acknowledge the possibility of a populated universe, should all the other populations be regarded as demonic? That doesn't come from any biblical theology. It's pure fear that has been inculcated into people of faith through hundreds of years. And that suppression began before the days of Christianity. In my book, The Eden Conspiracy, I show that in the 6th century BCE, that suppression was beginning within the rewriting of the Bible that was to become the foundation for Judaism and Christianity. Yet you go into the deep past, go into the root meanings of the keywords of those texts, listen to indigenous story around the world, and the narrative of paleo contact, in my opinion, becomes unavoidable. Another human response to close encounters and mass sightings is that of trauma, which leads to an inability to speak about or even remember the experiences which occurred. In my coaching work, I've come across groups of people who have experienced a close encounter together. Let's say it's 4 people who, when they were 15 years old, they were confronted by a craft and a being. 30 years later, 2 of them will still talk to each other from time to time to relive that memory and reassure each other that they have remembered correctly. And the other 2 not only won't speak about it, they will become very angry whenever the topic is broached. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. And it's because it was so frightening, so disturbing, so challenging to their general worldview, a feeling that if they really processed what happened, their ability to live an ordinary life doing ordinary things would be seriously impaired. And that fear response is very real. And it's one of the reasons why in my books, I try and encourage people to share their experiences, and to give one another permission to share stories that they can't explain, that they can't understand, or experiences where they only remember a fragment of what happened, which is often a trauma response. I find that when we do give each other permission to share our stories, even more stories emerge. And just to illustrate that, I'll tell you about a friend of mine. I'll call him Tom, a theologian in Australia, very well-respected theologian. And he was talking to his dad about my work, and his dad knows me. So his dad said, oh yes, what is Paul doing these days? And so Tom talked about my work in Paleo Contact, and his dad listened in silence. And then after a moment, his dad got up, left the room, and came back with a box. And he opened the box, and he took out pencil drawings and said, Tom, these are the drawings your grandfather made when Kraft visited his farm back in the 1950s, and a story of a sequence of close encounters followed. Now, my friend Tom had never heard that story before, not from his dad, not from his granddad. It had been totally silent within the life of that family until permission was given to broach the subject. And I find there is a great silence covering grassroots experience of UFO contact, UFO sightings, because parents want to protect their children, because people within a family don't want to be regarded as the lunatic. We have to move beyond that. And I think it's very helpful, all that is now in the public domain because of the July 26th hearing, it ought to give people permission to say, well, I've seen this, I've experienced this, and permission to people who are readers of ancient texts and say, well, I've interpreted it this way. I think contact was happening in the past. And that's the conversation I love to be a part of. And I think there is a public demand for that kind of conversation. The viewing figures we have on the fifth kind reflect that there is a massive appetite all around the world for a serious engagement with questions of contact in the present and the past. And many people today are wrestling with the question of what does contact mean today? Should we be worried? Or are we looking at an opportunity for a great leap forward in the story of humanity? In the July 26 hearing of 2023, an alarm response was not difficult to spot. Congressman Andy Ogles and Tim Burchett were very decisive in putting questions regarding the possibility of an existential threat to the national security of the United States of America. And their argument was that if there is such a threat, surely that is the business of the U.S. Congress. And surely secrets regarding a cosmic threat cannot be the private property of units within the military intelligence community. Now, I completely understand that alarm response. And logically speaking, if you've got craft in the sky you can't engage with, can't catch up with, and you can't shoot down, then potentially, yes, you would have to regard that as a threat, a potential threat. And yet, it's us trying to shoot them down, not vice versa. And we've seen encounters like this for more than 7 decades, so we might want to ask a broader range of questions. When we go to ancestral narratives, I believe a far more kaleidoscopic view emerges. If you go to the paleo contact stories of the Bible, or the Popol Vuh, or the stories of the sons of Osanabua, or listen to the stories of contact in ancient Norse story, Greek story, Vedic story from India, there is a spectrum of experience being referenced there. And yes, on the one hand, there are alarming stories of invasion, of annexation. The Hawaiian story of the Mo'o is a story of invasion. The story of the arrival of the Elohim, the Tseva Hashemayim, the sky armies in the Bible, and the division of the land in the Bible, that is a story of invasion and annexation. So yes, there are alarming stories. The Bible and the Vedas are very specific about the advanced weaponry with which some of our ancient visitors from the stars arrived. So, yes, on the one hand, there are things we should be concerned about. But on the other hand, in this great spectrum of story, we hear from many cultures around the world who say that our great leaps forward as humanity were aided by visitors from the stars, visitors from Sirius, according to the Dogon people, visitors from the Pleiades, according to Native American story and Aboriginal Australian story. And the great leaps forward were to do with how to live and thrive on the planet. The Book of Enoch in the Ethiopian Orthodox canon of the Bible speaks about ancient visitors, the Watchers, coming and a rich cultural exchange. Clothing, makeup, jewelry were all part of that rich cultural exchange. Many of the world's Pleiadian stories are about our great leap forward into agriculture. Once you have agriculture, you have surpluses, you can build cities, you can become a civilization. Our ancestors regarded contact with star people as the opportunity for great progress in human technology. Right now, it's our materials science that appears to be on the brink of a massive breakthrough that would turn us into spacefarers. I think we should be looking at present contact, not in a state of panic and alarm, but asking the question, who are we in contact with? And are the compacts that were made in the 1940s under President Truman still serving our best interests? How do we leverage this moment of contact in a way that produces another great leap forward? What would it mean for us if all of a sudden we had free energy, zero point energy, the ability to travel interstellar distances? It could transform the human experience. And that is why I think it's good to shine as much light, the light of scrutiny and accountability, on the program, on current contact. I wish the aerospace corporations every success in that reverse engineering, but that leap forward really belongs to all of us. And I want to know who's representing the human race in the conversations that are happening with our cosmic visitors. Who is making those decisions? In whose interests are those decisions being made? Could it be that the current contact is in fact the best thing that could have happened to humanity for tens of thousands of years? I find ancestral story very grounding in these kinds of questions. Their ancient texts and their ancient carvings portray contact as something to be viewed with awe. When we see visitors arriving holding their handbags of advanced technology, holding their pine cones indicating advanced cognitive abilities, when we see the symbols of seeds that imply a reseeding of our ecological environment, when we see ziggurats implying the ability to travel and communicate across dimensions and across interstellar distances, these carvings were made so carefully and so lovingly. They were not depicting scenes that say, if you ever see anything like this, bomb them out of the sky. They were depicting scenes that were sacred to ancient human memory. They suggest to me that our visitors include demographics whose contact with humanity could transform the human experience. It's not that I think we should be naive about contact, but I think we need to be far more thoughtful in asking questions about whether we can bomb them out of the sky. And I would like people to be prepared for those conversations when they begin to emerge publicly. Take a look at the information that emerged in that hearing and then ask yourself, what would it mean for the Pentagon to officially authenticate that material and then take the next step forward with regard to our present contact? That's the pattern we've been following, and it's the pattern I think we need to be ready for.
The Invasion of Eden, available on Amazon in paperback only from April the 9th, 2024.
If you enjoy our content here on Fifth Kind TV and would like to support our work, please would you consider subscribing to our new website, fifthkind.tv. Here we will have our full catalogue of material along with exclusive access to interviews and documentary content. Sign up today, become part of the community, become part of the conversation. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you there.